Hey there, it's Will O'Callaghan here from Off The Ball, and before you dive into this podcast, here's one you're going to want to stick in your diary. This coming Friday, Apple Green's annual 24/7 event is back, and for just one day only, they've got loads of brilliant offers across their stores. You can pick up a chicken fillet roll or a breakfast roll for just €2.47, have a car wash for €2.47, or grab a packet of Tato crisps for just 24 cent. There are some great food offers too. You've got Whoppers, selected 6-inch Subway sandwiches, Taco Bell beefy melt burritos, and Chopstick small bite boxes, all available for, you guessed it, €2.47. It's only happening this Friday, so don't miss out. Head along to your local Apple Green store and make the most of these fantastic one-day-only offers. Terms and conditions do apply. And now, enjoy your podcast.
Football on Off The Ball.
The Messi fairy tale in 2022 was absolutely right. Everybody in the world wanted Messi to win the World Cup. Even the opposition players, everyone felt he deserved it. It was been a long time coming.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Off The Ball Breakfast.
With Viagra Connect 50mg film-coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150mg tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.
Last night, folks. Feels like the sport has gone to bed by for a while. Not quite.
No,
not quite. Daily Mount last night hosted its last ever European game. That's quite big. Ross Tierney, a beautiful, beautiful winning goal in the 89th minute. You might have seen this already. It's a stunning effort. He's back in the Irish Independent there with his mother and supporter Cian Hankey, who was named here on the left. 2-1 over Balcani. They came from 1-0 behind there. They conceded the penalty. Douglas James Taylor got the equaliser.
It's a great goal as well.
Yeah, very well taken. And Ross Tierney's thunder bastard, I think we can safely say, in off the bar. Beautiful strike. The last ever game to be played at Daly Mount before the second leg away to Balcani. The reason they can't play beyond this if they qualify for the third qualifying round of the Conference League is that the standards of the stadium increase at that point and Daly Mount falls below it. So history made last night.
Yeah, and a great way to cap it off with the goal. You know, brilliant goal.
I've never seen a ball hit the net like that and come out. Mm-hmm. It's a unique one, I think, isn't it?
It's because of this net thing, right? That the nets, they're quite shallow, the nets. The old Dell. But it came right back.
I love a ball coming back over the white line after scoring. I love that. Absolutely. I don't really care how it happens. Just love it.
Absolutely.
I think Balcani had qualified, I think, for... I might be wrong there. They've either qualified for the Conference League at one point in the past or they've played against someone significant in... qualifier, but that's no mean feat to go and pick up a win, and they've done well too. I know people. I believe they were favourites for the game, but they did well to turn it around and come away with a victory too, having been 1-0 down with about 15 minutes to go.
Yeah,
great bit of ingenuity, I suppose, from Dawson Devoy to pick out Douglas
Beautiful.
James.
Beautiful. So for people that didn't see it, it's a free from deep, and it looks like he's going to cross it in for all intents and purposes down the line.
Yeah, it's one of them where you'd think he just lofted into the back post. Mm. You know, Caoimhín Kelleher to Liam Scales esque type. Ball dropped in, you know, but plays a lovely little like slide rule pass. I think they would
the one they call
describe
it. Yeah,
it, yeah. Douglas James Taylor first touch back of the net, and then Ross Tierney with the magic to win it. So decent position for them now going over to Balcani to go and get the. Tell me where that is. it's Kosovo, I think.
Kosovo, yeah.
Kosovo, yeah.
We have footage of this, do we?
We do
of Ross Tierney's goal.
No, you can't. That's the thing.
Here's ball now. James Taylor lays it down for Ross Tierney.
Yeah. It didn't just come out of the net. It came flying out.
Did you see the drink go behind the goal as well?
Yes.
It's just amazing.
That's our own Stephen Doyle commentating on affairs too. There was another great goal scored yesterday in a slightly less important game, a behind closed doors friendly in Spurs. Matheus Fernandes, big money signing from West Ham United. One of the volleys of the season already, I think it's fair to say. It's gone viral. It's on Spurs' official Instagram page. If Bobby Dwyer is watching this morning, he may comment.
You often see some unbelievable goals in pre-season because there's a bit of, you know, I'll give this a go, and maybe perhaps I wouldn't in, when the big lights are on and the cameras are going. But I remember Andreas Pereira scoring a volley for United at Old Trafford against, I want to say it was Brentford, came out to the edge of the box, and everyone christened him the pre-season Pirlo because he'd turn up for pre-season and then he'd be gone. He'd be off on loan in Valencia or something. But
that'd be a good list one. The best pre-season players.
Yeah. Because there is always someone who turns up, does really well, and then the season comes around and they're not really doing much.
There was a fellow called Mads Tim, played for Man United back in the day, and he went to Walsall Unknown. Paul Merson was the manager of Walsall.
Yeah. Joe Murphy would have been there, friend of the show.
Our goalkeeping buddy.
Yeah.
And Paul Merson rang Alex Ferguson and he said, if I could make the games happen at 10 a.m. on a Tuesday, he'd be the best player in the country. Mm. But when it came to Saturday at 3 p.m, he couldn't do it in front of the crowds.
That's interesting.
It was funny that I remember speaking to Andrew Omobamadele here one day, and I asked him that very question about players that were either really good in training and then like didn't turn it on during the games, or the opposite, where they wouldn't bother in training and they would be really good the weekend. And he said that Teemu Pukki was literally that. He said he was the one player you did not want in your five-a-side team, and then he'd go out the weekend and he'd like bag a hat-trick and you'd be like a clinical finisher, unbelievable stuff. So
I think
you'd rather, rather be a poor trainer and a good match player, I suppose.
Yeah. I think there actually is something in players performing at specific parts of the year. Like there was, Sean Kelly, the famous Irish cyclist.
Yes.
He was really, really good in March. Like he won Paris-Nice, which is a race that happens in earlier in the year, and he won that 7 times, I think in a row almost, or nearly in a row. And his some of his fellow cyclists said if the Tour de France was in March, you would have won it 7 times. It's just because he was unbelievable just coming into the season, then would tail off as the season went on. So like, I think there's actually something in players actually performing in pre-season and not giving out their best once the season starts.
Mm. It's all well and good when you get the space and time in pre-season, isn't it? Like, you know, technique's one thing. Like the Fernandez thing is probably separate to this because that's just pure technique. But replicating
no
that under that under pressure and time of the Premier League when you're fatigued is kind of what happens. That's why we don't see it. MK Don's potentially the most pre-season friendly that you're going to get, I reckon.
And you could justify them playing anybody. Like if Wigan were playing MK Dons in a preseason friendly, I'd be like, yeah, fair.
Doesn't matter.
If Man United are playing him, like, yeah, makes
didn't
sense.
Did they play Man United recently? Did MK Dons play in Ireland recently? Or is that?
I don't know.
Unbeknownst to myself.
I couldn't tell you. I know the infamous MK Dons game is when they hammered Louis Van Gaal's Man United.
I was just going to say, the Dele Alli game. Yeah.
Dele Alli, Benning Fowey, Will Grigg.
Yeah, a few months later he's gone to Spurs. Mm.
Is there any preseason opponent you'd see on paper and think that's not right? You'd raise an eyebrow at.
Oh, there's a few. I remember Akron and Stanley played Marseille a few years ago.
that's a good example. Like, yeah,
I wouldn't be comfortable playing Napoli in pre-season.
Okay,
wouldn't trust their intentions.
Atletico Madrid.
So what you want to do this?
Atletico's good.
AC Milan are a very pre-season game.
Yeah, they're nice to you. Like, yeah. Speaking of Atletico Madrid, one of a couple of really big sides that played bowls in Daily Mount in Europe over the years, Manchester United, Atletico Madrid, Bayern Munich, have all had European games at any amount. Zinedine Zidane played there.
United one was against Shamrock Rovers, but it was obviously still a big European
Correct. And that's it for the stadium, which is sad, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's significant. It is a significant marker. Albeit, they may not have been all that common. That actually probably adds to it in a way as well. The fact that when these nights do roll around, they are pretty special for one of the biggest clubs in Ireland, so it's definitely something to take note of, although their final game in general will of course be bigger because it will be the final game at Daily Mount, but I don't think this is something to snuff your nose up at, you know. So
it does feel like the League of Ireland, generally speaking, right, is getting a bit lost at the moment.
Everything's getting a bit lost at the moment.
No, I think the League of Ireland specifically now, right? So this game last night, I just don't feel like there was a massive build-up to it. You know, there's no real thing made about Bowles' last game in Europe or on media. Now, I don't know if people are sported out, like, if they're fatigued from everything that's just happened and this is the ultimate come-down this week. But even in the League of Ireland this weekend, right, there's only one game happening tomorrow. Pats against Dundalk, 8 o'clock. And then on Saturday, you have a doubleheader. Galway against Waterford. Sligo against Drogheda. Feels like this is their time to come back. I just feel like, obviously you're going to have your staunch League of Ireland fans. It's going to be playing Virgin Media TV. We're going to have live commentary of it and all that. Just feels like the general feeling around the League of Ireland was there was huge buzz about it a couple of years, and now people are a bit, I don't know, it feels like they have to make an effort to get people back again.
Yeah, I'd say there's a few contributing factors to that, to be fair. One of them being the year that all of that happened was Damien Duff doing all of this unbelievable kind of marketing unintentionally. And the fact as well that the league was very competitive in a sense, because Shamrock Rovers, or sorry, Shelburne were a good bit ahead for the majority of the year and then began to falter, and it got interesting and it was a bit of a title race. We haven't really had that the last little while. Bows are 7 points behind Shamrock Rovers with after 25 games.
Doesn't help.
No. Pat, now, to be fair, Pats can bring that back to five. They have a game in hand. But there's definitely a lack of maybe star quality unfair. Namely, the loss of Damien Duff is pretty big as far as the local or casual follower is going to be taking it in. But at the same time, we are off, not long off, a bit of a break for the league too. So there's obviously just a bit of momentum that needs to come back into it. The further you get into these European games, I think the European games is a big one too. I know Vinnie Perth was talking about it a couple of weeks ago and the attendance at the Shamrock Rovers game. Mm. That being said, it was the same night as one of the big World Cup games, so that would have a bearing on it, unfortunately. But I think, yeah, the attendance is something that gets praised so regularly, and rightly so, for the amount of people that turn up for the games. But I think as an Irish footballing community, getting behind, regardless of whoever's playing in Europe, because it benefits the league as a whole,
yeah,
as far as the coefficient goes, is important. Now, I know that doesn't really answer the question as to why it's maybe not getting the momentum or the attention that it needs. But yeah, there's a lot of factors as to why maybe it's not moving at the same speed as it was a couple of years ago.
Yeah, it's kind of praising what it did a couple of years ago, where it genuinely seemed to capture people. It's not that I wouldn't say it's in big trouble. I would just be like, it's one of those where you'd watch out for it.
Well, does
just
it
keep a look at it? Yeah.
Suppose does it not depend on what your sort of what your aim is as a league, and what you determine as a success and what you determine as growth? Because if you're talking about growth being worldwide fame and attention and capturing the imagination of the lay fan and being in the backs of the pages, backs of the papers, and coverage of the league from people who don't cover it all the time as a success, then yeah, I'd say you're onto something. But last year we had, in 2025, an 11% increase in attendances in the League of Ireland.
Yeah.
And I think the total figure was 1.1 million. In 2026, in the halfway mark, it was 490,000. So it'll be slightly probably down on last year's figures, but last year's figures was an 11% increase. So you're still talking about year on year, on year growth for the League of Ireland in terms of attendances, and what actually keeps these clubs alive is people going to the games and people creating an atmosphere and gate receipts. And if that's what you're measuring on, then it's still growing and it still is a success.
Mm.
Yeah,
in terms of coverage, we're in the middle of World Cup year. World Cup's just finished. All Ireland hurling final was at the weekend. All Ireland football finals this weekend. There's a lot going on. So in terms of like capturing the imagination, I think there's just we're just finished a World Cup. Like that had the football community's attention for the last 4.5-5 weeks.
Yeah.
So now we'll really start to see what happens with
definitely let's see what happens here. Look, it was a good summer for the League of Ireland too, because there was a few representatives played for the Republic of Ireland senior team, which was great to see. A couple of subs came on. Dawson the Voice started, didn't he? One of the friendlies for Ireland.
Yeah, he started over in Canada.
I think the big thing is we need a title race.
Or he started in, yeah, it was Canada, wasn't he? Started again, I think, yeah. Started.
We desperately need a title race. And the worry here is Sam McRover's run away with it again. And then you are talking about it's the European games that get people going. I'm talking about how many League of Ireland fans do you meet that don't support a club?
Yeah, and that's one thing.
That's the test I'm talking about.
That was a point that's made in the comments there by Tom McCarthy that, no, I don't know if I totally agree with it, but the sentiment I think is there. He says the League of Ireland might as well be called the League of Dublin. Four of the top five teams are Dublin clubs. The rest of the country loses interest, which is a big problem for growth. And I think the last part of that is true. I think regardless of the World Cup and the attention being elsewhere, and of course in certain parts of the country other sports are going to take precedence, but there is probably too big of a discrepancy between the interest and the appetite for it outside of Dublin. Now that's maybe another thing altogether, and I think that would still have been the case a couple of years ago when it was story number one on the front of the papers and everything that we were doing as well. So I think you're probably right. There is probably a natural lull right now, and it will be interesting to see how it goes over the next little while.
Yeah. But it just, it needs someone to keep up at Rovers.
Yeah, for sure. It could do with that for sure.
And
really.
Like, it's funny because the whole Dublin dominance in the league is like, Vinnie Perth would be one of the biggest voices on that, saying it's not a good thing. Yeah. You know, and he could easily be captured away by it. And it's true. But I just, you know, I think that's the test. It's like, what you were asking there, what do you want from this league and all that? Is it a development league to send players abroad to develop an eventual senior Republic of Ireland internationals? Or is it a league in itself that's self-contained? Now, you look at the facilities, it's not a very attractive looking product sometimes with the actual stadia. But then inside it, it's so much better than it used to be. There's actually a lot of quality players there as well. It is a good thing. But how many fans of League of Ireland are there that don't necessarily have a team that they support?
I don't know what you do about that, though.
How many leagues do have that?
Yeah, but you'd have Premier League watchers regularly who wouldn't necessarily follow a club.
Do you?
Yeah.
Like who?
I think so.
Like people who support in another league and then watch Premier League.
Yeah, like that kind of thing. And like, obviously, look, that's a big, that's a
I think
huge,
that's an exception to the rule, though. Like how many...
I'm not sure I'd watch La Liga happily, like, and I think it's a very good league.
But would you watch La Liga outside of Atletico, Barca and Real Madrid?
I think that's a perfect example of what you'd watch it for.
No, but
who are the teams that you watch as the casual fans?
How many fans of the SPFL are fans without supporting a club? How many fans of the Serie A are fans of Serie A without supporting a club? Like,
well, sorry,
I don't know if attracting global interest is really feasible for any league outside of the Premier League.
It's not global interest I'm talking about. I'm talking about Irish. There's loads of football fans in Ireland. Loads. And they'll go and watch football abroad instead.
I think one of the main things as well is that the transfer fees still aren't growing in the right way in general. You've got some big ones in there, of course, the Miss Amelia stuff, the Victor Ojemvuna stuff, but like Svon Kenny going over to Portsmouth for a very low fee, below 50k, was what was being reported. That's not good. And that's not a good reflection. And I think that's the type of thing when you talk about the 11% increase in the attendances, and that's what keeps the clubs going. That's what keeps them surviving. I think the next thing is to stop them from surviving and get them thriving. And you do that by the transfer fees growing a little bit more. And that kind of has to be a collective thing. And that grows through facilities and players having a reason to stay, as opposed to needing to go and teams not needing to sell.
And European football as well.
And European football. Put them in the market.
Yeah, well, that's the biggest thing. I think, there's very few players that would see, at least at the top level in the League of Ireland, that this league is their end point. A lot of them want to move on to somewhere else. Like, I covered UCD a lot in college, and the team would change every 2 years. Now, it is an exceptional circumstance with them because they bring in a lot of young players and the tend to sell a lot on, particularly to Rovers, Shamrock Rovers, that is. But I think, Europe is massive. And I know the more Shamrock Rovers succeed in Europe and the further they go, in the short term, the wider that gap in the league table grows. But I think in the long term, that exposure, the marketing behind it will pay dividends to the league in general, hopefully. That'll be the hope. But like results like last night, it's just about going out and beating teams that, you know, people in Europe would maybe recognise the name Balkany when it comes to European football at a certain level. Mm-hmm. And if Bows are beating teams like that, maybe people check it out. I'm not convinced by the global interest thing and how important that is for the league just yet, because I think the League of Ireland is a very...
I'm not saying you are, in general.
Because it's a very unique league. I'm not sure if people would enjoy the league from outside, because it feels very Irish to me. Like, it feels very uniquely Irish.
Yeah, you
think
it's
played
in
the setting and the parks that they're played in.
Yeah, you get a few the odd influencer coming over from the UK to watch games.
Yeah,
a day on League of Ireland. So amazed how actual good this atmosphere is and balls and all that. I know it's just on the cusp of something that could be really good. It has the potential for a lot of it. It can be exciting on its day. It needs a tight race and needs people to pay attention, and maybe it will. A comment in here, Tommy McCarthy, League of Ireland. Oh, sorry, we did that one. Terry Kelly was the one I wanted to read out. Best European team I saw on day of the year was Dundee United in 85. 2-5 to Dundee. Sturrock Band, etc. Brilliant team. There are memories here.
Oh, for sure.
Of European games.
I like that he put it, the score in as 2-5 and not 5-2.
Yeah, because his team last. That was good.
Is that the Dundee United team that would get referenced as having a 100% record against Barcelona? You ever see that? There's Dundee United. I think it's Dundee United. It could be Motherwell, maybe. I'm not sure. Anyway, move on from that. I'll do a bit of digging here.
Talk amongst yourselves there.
Establishments have been in touch with us in the last 24 hours. Within the last 24 hours, the Ranch Clare Morris has commented their own name on their own social media account with two tongue-out emojis. Saint Scotters says, we have all them points listed here in Valencia, minus the tenants.
We can do without the tenants, I think.
The tenants really threw me that, yesterday. Yeah.
It's very specific.
Yeah, it is.
Specifically to me.
Pete Malloy.
Oh, Pete, yeah.
Yeah, Petey.
Yeah. Said that was the Bernard Shaw in 2015.
Ooh. R.I.P. in peace.
What are we talking about here? This is Enda's ideal pub to watch a game.
Yep.
It's taken off.
Went into it in detail on yesterday's breakfast buffet.
Yeah. Kino Sudawan says, you've described the deep south in Cork City. I can vouch for that.
Is it true?
It's good.
Good spot.
It's good.
Yeah.
Kilmardinny Inn as well is one not too far from us, North Dublin. It's ticks the boxes there, loads of screens, big open plan set up, table service and a bar, bit of food too.
So what is the ideal pub to watch a game in? Peter Hill says, totally agree about the booking of tables. Yeah. Which is your point there.
You can book tables there, but I've never gone in and not been able to find a table though, so.
That's okay, because that's the reason I don't like it. Mm. It's because I can never get a table.
Yeah, yeah.
I got a question on the back of this yesterday in voice note form. What's the best pub in Dublin city centre for everything that you listed, and what's the best pub just outside Dublin city centre? And I'm going to throw it out there. I don't know.
Okay, right.
I don't know.
Really difficult.
Don't know. Dermot Keenan's in touch saying, I haven't seen anyone drink tennis since the late 80s.
That's a real Glasgow thing, isn't it?
It's a huge Donegal thing.
Yeah, I was going to say tennis. Yeah, tennis.
Everywhere in Donegal.
Right. Yeah.
It's also tenants. there are three main places in the world where you can drink tennants. Donegal, Glasgow, and I would give you 50 guesses and you just wouldn't get it.
Tanzania.
Split. Yeah.
Well, I know it's not the answer. Belfast has most pubs have.
It's not
tenants,
the main one.
Sarajevo?
No.
Yeah.
Bruges?
No.
Clermont?
No. Will I give it?
No.
No, let's just keep guessing for the next 45 minutes.
We've got some time to film. There's no sports on. Naples.
Ah, they were already mentioned
two
today.
Already.
Two shots
for Naples. Huge drinkers of tennis. They have tennis strong.
Do they?
What?
So extra strong tennis. Do you think Diego had a point?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That's been around class. For a while, like.
Wow. A point, all right.
Hey there, it's Will O'Callaghan here from Off The Ball. And before you dive into this podcast, here's one you're going to want to stick in your diary. This coming Friday, Apple Green's annual 24/7 event is back. And for just one day only, they've got loads of brilliant offers across their stores. You can pick up a chicken fillet roll or a breakfast roll for just €2.47. Have a car wash for €2.47. Or grab a packet of Tato crisps for just 24 cent. There are some great food offers too. You've got Whoppers, selected 6-inch Subway sandwiches, Taco Bell beefy melt burritos, and Chopstick small bite boxes, all available for, you guessed it, €2.47. It's only happening this Friday, so don't miss out. Head along to your local Apple Green store and make the most of these fantastic one-day-only offers. Terms and conditions do apply. And now, enjoy your podcast.
One thing I want to talk about coverage here, right? So the back page, we're looking through the back pages this morning. Well, it is a quiet time for sport, but that's okay too, because we love to talk about. But on the Camogie side of things, right? So as I said there, start the show, we've Rachel Sheehan on later. And the semi-finals are on this week, and it's a doubleheader in Thurles. Jesus, lads. Trying to find coverage of this in the paper. It's nowhere. Right? Absolutely nowhere. So you have Bulls, you have Arsenal linked with Bouadi, the young fellow from Morocco, the 18-year-old from the World Cup, okay. €100 million rated player. Right. We've used Joe Brody's stuff to motivate us before, admits ex-Kerry star Moran. Then inside, naturally enough, of course, understandably, Kerry Mayo get a huge spread in the back on the second page of the Irish Independent Sports section this morning. Returning Fury said it's best yet to come. Foden signs new 4-year deal with Man City. Relieved Philipson claims overdue win. Darren?
It is overdue indeed, yeah.
Paywall and squeeze season make no sense for GAA. So lots of think pieces. But the semi-finals of the All-Ireland Senior Camogie Championship are upon us. 2 days' time. Can't find it. Now we're talking about a condensed sports season. Particularly the summer, the last week alone. Crazy. So it's very, very difficult for everyone to watch things. But again, this is a bit like the League of Ireland now. They have the place back to themselves, so to speak. They have the attention waiting for them. And I just wonder, is this their time to capitalise? Again, it's very, very difficult to promote these things. You can't necessarily force people to to be interested. But I wonder, can more be done collectively? I'm not solely blaming this on the newspapers not covering it. Yeah. We have to cover it too. People have to talk about it. And of course, it's huge for people involved, friends, family, and supporters of Camogie in general. Massive. This is not, I'm not talking to those people. I'm just saying, can we get this out there? Because we're going all in on the All-Ireland football final. We went in the All-Ireland hurling final. These are the Camogie showpiece events. It just feels like, again, a bit like the Bowes thing last night, obviously a different level of an example, but it's just all kind of, it's upon us. Yeah. We live in a world where it's too content heavy, there's too much stuff happening. I don't know, these things seem to come up on us and there's no real promotion. Then the things happen and we talk about it in reverse.
Yeah, the onus is on everyone here. Like, it's on the media, ourselves, it's on the players and the teams themselves to, you know, get people interested in the game. And it's on the fans and the people of the counties involved as well, I think. And yeah, like the condensed sports season, it's a fair point and there is lots going on. There's the added thing of the World Cup this year, but there's always lots going on. And it's always the same issue we bring up every single year. Yeah. It's like, oh, there's too much going on. But like, at some point, something has to be done. At some point, an effort has to be made. And probably the wrong phraseology to use there. I think people are putting an effort, but I think the counties and teams aren't marketing their teams or their players well enough. Like, we're not getting to know players. Mm. We're not finding things out about players. There's plenty of good stories. We've had people on the show over the years from various counties and backgrounds, and there's been great interviews, but we just don't hear about that enough. As I said, there's an onus on us as well, but I just think
there is.
We're just not making use of it. Like, it's a shame this weekend that we're only talking about it now on the Thursday, and we're talking about it in the light of, God, we haven't talked about it. And, you know, these are great games generally as well, and it's a double header ensemble. You'd hope there'd be a decent crowd at it, but if there isn't, you can see why. Because people don't know what's on.
Totally. Well, if they don't know, they won't go.
I do think there's a massive onus on the association themselves to promote this, right?
Yeah, for sure, yeah.
And one thing that I find incredibly frustrating when we're covering, especially Camogie in particular, LGFA has got much better at this, it's just the sheer lack of information available publicly and easily for these games. For example, if you go onto the Camogie Association website, fixture and results, you click through several pages to get to the actual results that you're looking for, because you're looking for the All-Ireland Senior Camogie Championship. You go into it, fixtures and results haven't updated since the group. They're not there. There's an All-Ireland semi-final this weekend. They're not available on the Camogie website in the section that under fixtures and results.
Yeah.
So, like, we can talk about news coverage, not knowing the players, but if the association can't do the basics of updating the fixtures on their own website, what do you want people to do? How are they supposed to know it's on? You go searching for it, you can't find it.
Yeah, in my mind, sport is storylines. Like, you look at the men's Gaelic football season, and that's what it is. It's Kobe leaving Mayo, and it's Clifford potentially going for another player of the year. It's the new rules, it's all that type of stuff. There's just that's all part of it. There's no continuity in my mind in terms of the stories coming out and the promotion of the game. Like, as I say, we're not getting to know players, not getting to know teams. That's my biggest issue.
I think that's a decent point about the not getting to know players and all that sort of stuff. Like, there's probably a bit of creativity maybe, and I hate when people, and I'm going to do it now, come up with problems and don't really have a solution to mind, and that's what I'm going to do now. But we, before a big weekend of Gaelic games, so LGFA, Camogie, hurling and Gaelic football, there's launches where there's X amount of players are put up and they get asked questions, and that's grand and that's good stuff, and definitely don't stop doing that. But I don't know, is there maybe another way of going about doing that you can maybe make a point of difference in the Camogie and the LGFA and do something a little bit different? I don't know what that is, but it's just following the same format that is used for Gaelic football and hurling, and I don't know who started doing it first, but you get the gist of it, you get the point.
Yeah,
I think that works because people know the players already in Gaelic football and hurling. They just do, they're more exposed to them because the games are on the telly more, and there is just more of an interest in it too, which is fine. But you need to do something maybe a little bit different to create that interest. I don't know, get some of the players going around the schools, maybe around schools that aren't in the counties where the teams are from, like, you know, get some of the Galway players to go around a few schools in Dublin while they're up here or something like that a day before the game, and that's how you maybe get more people going to the games. And the attendances aren't terrible, to be fair, when it gets up to the big days for Croke Park and all that sort of stuff. But
the product is there,
yeah, for sure. But it's Rachel has said this as well a couple of times, going to some games and there's just not really being anyone there earlier on in the year.
Yeah.
And it's how you get people involved early so that they follow the storylines and that we're not jumping on the storylines now. And we know about them a little bit earlier. And again, as Darragh said, and we've all said, that's on us to go find those storylines as well. But there's probably a bit of combined thinking that could go a long way here.
There is. We need, yeah, everyone needs to be better here. But, you know, there's only so much people can cover at the same time. But see, like Enda said, like it's kind of on everyone too. It's on the association. There's a good example of some of the Women's World Cup, the rugby. Not just because it is a women's sport, as in I'm talking about sports that aren't covered as well as they should be, or disciplines within sports. The Women's World Cup, didn't a lot of the players take to social media themselves and start making content? And then there's a certain generation of people who will immediately become more familiar with that player as a result. And like, I know we're talking about amateur athletes here, but something like that would probably help a certain generation of people. I know this person now.
Yeah, there's a format there to an extent. And like you say, it is slightly different with the professional aspect of things. But yeah, the players just took it upon themselves during that tournament and just went, just going to get our names out here. Now, whether that was actually a conscious thing or not, I don't know. Maybe it was just they went out and they were having a bit of fun on TikTok. Like, it could have been as simple as that, but it doesn't really matter. It had the same outcome. And
it was around the time of the tournament, so they were excited.
Released the fleece stuff and all that. Like, it went viral. And then, you have 30,000 people in the Aviva, and like, that team has done a great job of, you know, hanging around for 45 minutes to an hour after games and meeting every single fan that shows up for them, whether it's 4,000 or 5,000 in the Affidavit in Belfast or if it's 30,000 in the Aviva. You know, they made sure that this tried to get around to as many fans as they could. And there can be lessons taken from different sports and stuff like that. But I think Match makes a good point. I think it's a combined effort. It shouldn't just be on the players and the counties themselves, or it shouldn't just be on us, or it shouldn't just be on the association or the fans or whoever. I think everyone needs to do better here.
I'm not sure if Michael's having a go here on YouTube, but his point is there's never been more promoted football season ever, week in, week out. We've all talked in football since National League. The relentless nature of it has helped.
Yeah.
Which is true.
That's true.
We're only checking in with this now at the very end.
But then again, there is also the fact that it has been unbelievably entertaining the entire way through. And that's not to suggest that the Camogie has or hasn't been. I haven't watched enough.
We just don't know. A lot of people don't know about it. Yeah.
But the football has been. And that has also helped with us talking about it. We're talking about it because it's been so brilliant.
Totally.
And people are interested in it because it's been so brilliant.
Yeah. And speaking of, on the Gaelic football side of things, Kevin McStay was on with Owen last night. So he's heading up the Gaelic Football Expert Advisory Group and follows up the work from the FRC. So funny enough, they are looking at certain things still. It feels like the game's in an amazing place. But one of those things is 4 points for a goal. I thought that was dead in the water. Not so.
It was funny. You're going to jump in there. But I was looking at, we were in the power rankings a few weeks ago, and I came across a stat that there's been more goals this year than there was last year in Gaelic football. And it's been like an incremental increase. Like every year for the last couple of years, I think it's 5 years in the bounce, and it's the first time that that's happened since like 1910 or something like that. Someone might be able to verify that, but I'm pretty sure that's accurate. And that surprised me, because a lot of the talk at the beginning was when the two-pointer came in that it would make the goal a little bit redundant, but it hasn't at all, really. But when you look at someone like Kerry, who don't really focus their game on goals at all, but you see some other teams do be really successful with that, Mayo being one who love a goal.
Yeah.
And Westmeath scored quite a lot of goals and they got success out of it as well. I don't know, is it needed? I don't know, do we need to make it 4 points? I don't know, are teams approaching a game thinking we don't need to score goals here? But that being said, I don't think it would ruin the game if they did do it.
I was there that weekend, experimental one.
The Railway Cup.
I was there, it was chaos. It was amazing to watch. It was just the final scorelines were outrageous. It was the Leinster lads that met each other like an hour before in the dressing room, and the Connacht boys were destroying them left and right. I'd like to see it. There's a few things that are up for debate about this. Not being able to go back into your own half after crossing the line, kind of pass bust out, which is the attempt there is to negate the lateral play, which I really admire.
Because I
think that can be absolutely mind numbing to watch. We're talking about neutrals there for League of Ireland, neutral fans. As a neutral watching a Gaelic football match, there's few things less interesting.
It's an interest. The backcourt violation, I suppose, is what it's been compared to. That's an interesting one, because do teams then, are they less likely to get on the fast break? Will they take their time coming up the pitch? Because that's what was happening in basketball at one point, but then they introduced the 5 seconds you have to get up the court into the front court. So that might create more problems than it solves for me, because you might just end up having to add another rule that, okay, you can't stay in your own half for too long either. You've got 15 seconds, say, to get out of your own half. So I'm not sure about that. It would force more turnovers, which in my mind makes the game a little bit better, but maybe it doesn't. You're making a good point before the show ended that it turns into almost AFL at that point, that the ball is just always on the ground.
Mm. If there's constant turnovers, that's not fun to watch either.
Yeah.
On the goals, and there's actually been a 40% increase in goals this year, year on year. So like, it's not like it's disappeared because of the two-point rule, which I think was a fear for a lot of the rule makers and a lot of the people who were potentially putting arguments up against it. I just want to make one clarification point. Mm-hmm. You can get the fixtures on the Camogie website, but you do have to do a little bit of digging. If you search Camogie fixtures and results, if you go in via that link, it doesn't bring you to the most recent ones. If you do go onto the actual website and go through to the fixtures and results, it brings you to a different page and you can find them there.
Right.
So
okay,
just for clarity on the Camogie Association there. But yeah, on the backcourt situation for GAA, mm-hmm, I do think it would be an interesting thing that you would end up with a lot more turnovers, because teams would get into the opposition half, not be able to go back. But it is that argument of like, are we doing the Father Ted thing with the dent in the bonnet here, where we're hammering out, and we've landed on fixing the dent, and yet we want to keep hammering out, and eventually we're going to end up with a car full of dents. And it does sort of, it reminds me a little bit of VAR in the sense of, they brought in VAR to fix all these issues with football, and then they've had to make rules to help VAR and make rules then to help those rules, and then continue to make rules to fix the mistakes that are happening as a result of the new rules and VAR. So we just can't keep chasing perfection here with GAA. We've landed on a really good summer, fantastic entertainment, teams making surprise runs into the semi-finals. And for some reason, we want to continue the evolution and continue to change it. And I'm just like, can we not just have a year? Can we give it a year? Can we not just take a beat, see if it works again next year? If it's still entertaining, maybe we look at something else 2 years down the line. I just don't get why we need to always have this constant change and constant evolution of the rules. Like, why can't we just enjoy what we have right now?
Yeah.
And maybe see, because what will happen is teams evolve. Teams change, teams learn the new rules, they build systems around them, and then teams build systems to beat those systems. And eventually you do end up in a bit of a stalemate. So why don't we wait until we get towards that stalemate and see what these teams are going to actually evolve to do next year?
It's a reasonable argument. Maybe they're in the mindset now of doing things, of being proactive, of changing. And when you get into that rhythm, you keep going with, like, it could be anything. It doesn't have to be getting football. It's like when you start doing jobs around the place, you're making progress.
Doing a few chores,
you want to do more ones and more and more and more. But the Father Ted analogy is apt, I think. That's very much the case. Well, I think the Kevin McStay's argument was, well, the two-pointer actually does negate the power of the goal. Because I know one of your arguments was that it doesn't, but he was using that. He referenced the Bridget's game, the club game, towards the end of the club season, and it was very decisive in that, the two-pointer killing the impact completely of a goal scored by the opposition. But my initial fear for the four-point goal would be like, oh, games would be over in no time.
I don't think it negates the power of a goal. I just don't think it has negated teams going for goal. It actually has created more goal-scoring opportunities because teams are playing a little bit further back and then there's more space in behind.
That's true.
Whereas, like, of course, goals don't mean as much now.
Yeah.
But there are more goals now. So do we want to see more impactful goals or fewer impactful goals because they're getting 4 points, or more less impactful goals?
Because there's unintended consequences with anything you do in this situation, and there's a world where you make a 4-point goal and teams go, we cannot concede one of them, and just sit back into their shells and actually, in a weird way, take a hit of the 2-pointer. Say, let them have a goal because we can't afford to let them get a goal. You know, so there is an unintended consequence there, but it's the same with what's happened now in that, you know, we thought that would happen where teams would be like, oh, good, just, you know what, we let them have a goal because it's the same as a 2-pointer, it's all a one. And maybe that is what's happening, and maybe teams are having a little bit more abandon when it comes to defending and saying, but you know what, we'll throw a few extra bodies forward here because worst case scenario, they go very quickly and score a goal, or they work around, ball around for a while and kick a two. So I'm with you on the, we don't need to keep changing, but the counterpoint to the let's wait for the stalemate is
true.
Why wait for the stalemate when you can just keep changing?
Yeah.
Keep them on their toes, keep them thinking, don't let them build systems.
Well, they're doing so well at the changes, yeah. So it's like, let's keep doing more changes.
Look, I'm
happy for them to test the 4-point goal. I don't mind the whole taking the ball to the halfway and you can't go back. I like all of that. Like, they can do what they want. It's like, but I think what they should do, they should get rid of the fisted point.
Tell us why.
I hate the fisted point.
Yeah, I don't like the fisted point either.
I think it's a cop-out beyond measure. I think it's borderline cheating. I think it's too easy. I think it looks too easy on the eye. I think you run, you make all this effort and you showcase all this skill, and at the end of the day, you just pop it over the bar. You can't pop it in the goal. Why can you pop it over the bar?
It is one of the most deflating feelings, I think, when you're in a stadium and you're like, oh, and then he just pops over the bar and it's like, okay, grand. And it's so important to clarify when you're talking about this that it is almost all of the time the right thing to do. Almost all of the time. It makes sense to do it. I get it, right? I get it. It's a guarantee. It's a safe option. You get your score, you keep scoreboard taken over and you move on. But from a personal point of view, we're talking about rule changes here.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's one of them that is like, okay, this needs to go because it's ruining football to such a degree that it's the worst thing ever. But from my perspective, my enjoyment of watching the game is already through the roof, and it would take it to another degree if they just said, right, do you know what? You can't fist it over the bar. And I know the counterpoint, because we've obviously talked about this before, that the two Yeager are going to come with is that, and it's a fair point, that when someone's bearing down on goal, especially from an angle, from a tight angle, and that's where you see it most, that they fist it over, they'd probably just turn around and try and recycle the ball.
But then bring the 4-point goal in. Because then you'll quickly drop it down to your foot and have a shot.
Yeah.
Everyone's all for getting rid of the fisted point.
I don't think they are.
Until their team are in the middle of a All-Ireland decider.
Yeah, I know, I said that. It's the right thing to do. Like, it is.
It's the right thing to do.
I'm not. Like, they're doing what they're doing in the rules. The rule is unsporting.
You'd be all
the
for it.
The rule is unsporting. It should not be allowed. Gaelic football, let's be honest with you. Gaelic football is already easy enough as it is to play, right? You can put the ball down and play soccer if you want. If you want to play soccer, play soccer.
Within context,
right?
Yeah.
You do what you want, right?
Yeah.
I don't mind losing you here as well. I don't mind this, right? I feel very strong.
It's just saying it's easy to play. I just see it.
Against, obviously, it's hugely skillful. I'm being mildly facetious. I know that's the easiest to play. I'm just saying, it's a sport with a lot of options. And I think it's one option too many to fist the ball over the bar.
So we obviously disagreed about this before the show, but can I actually give a point that would support your argument? I don't agree with your argument as a whole. I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing in football, but I do think, were you to take away the fisted point, it would improve the shooting on goal, which is a massive problem in GAA, and how bad footballers are finishing with goals.
Have we brought this to air? We have, haven't we? The standard of finishing actual goal chances.
One-on-one
chances, like the telegraphed finish, nature of the telegraphed finish. Obviously, there's loads of great goals. I'm just saying, generally speaking. And penalties as well goes into that. But yeah, go on.
Because it's such a highly skilled game now, and like the two-pointer is really up that, and just even around the park, everyone is so highly skilled. But it's the penalties and the one-on-one chances are bizarrely low-level skill-wise. Across the board, there are, as you said, there's been some great goals this season as well, but I do think, like, you watch a game and you see someone go one on one, you're not thinking, yeah, that's a goal, you're thinking that it's probably a decent chance to get saved there, like,
yeah, good chance. And then the commentators will reflect that. I know we have Stephen Greedis on the line, we'll speak to him very shortly, but I feel that the commentators' response, generally speaking, when, like, you say a penalty is missed or a one-on-one opportunity is, oh, there's a chance missed there.
Yeah.
But I don't know, maybe it's the soccer mindset of, like, it's a goal opportunity, that's huge.
I think a lot of players just focus on smashing it and they end up in a good height for the keeper, generally kind of at them or just to the left or right of them. Whereas, you know, I'd love to see some players just kind of passing it into the corner.
They're aesthetically pleasing too, because they're rare. You don't really see. I know Dara Heenan scored a couple in the the Connacht Championship where he just kind of side footed in. Dean Healy got one in the Tottenham Cup final where he just caressed it into the corner.
That's what I'm looking for.
Ryan O'Donoghue was winning as loud as well. It was good. But sorry, the general point is 100% accurate. Yeah.
Some of my best friends are Gaelic football goals.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, they're amazing. I'm not against finishing in general, but I just think the fisted point, man,
get rid of it. Like, I don't know, I hate it.
What you're taught as a forward in GA of going for goals low and hard. Go low and hard. That's how you're taught how to finish. So maybe that makes it easier for goalkeepers. I don't know. Like, you will end up with players going through on goal, matching in the clutches. They'll turn around. They will turn around. They'll turn around. They'll play it back.
No,
play it back.
I think people
complaining about that.
I think what actually would happen is if someone's burning on goal, like straight on goal, right? There's so many times this season it's happened that where someone has ran through on goal and just fisted it over the bar because they're maybe 2 points up and it's three, or they're 3 points up and it's four. And it's the right thing to do because you're going from 3 to 4 and it's in a two score game. That's fine. I think those situations, they would either kick it over the bar, which would be a little more interesting than fisting it over the bar, hand passing it over the bar, considering you can't hand pass it into the net. And the ones from the tight angle where someone's coming in and they try to fist it, they're going to turn around and come back out. I think we're severely underestimating how difficult it would be to be coming in at that angle and decide, oh, let me stop here, turn around and go back, when you've got 3 or 4 defenders that are going to come around and squeeze the life out of you.
And your momentum is
sprint forward. You're either going to drop the ball, you're going to get pushed out over the line, or you're going to lose it. Fair enough, you might get away with it sometimes.
See, why is your default worry about this and cynicism that it will actually ultimately be cynical play and possession will be recycled? With the damning indictment of the game in a default way?
No, it's a damning indictment of professional sports or high-level sports, is that when you need to change something, when you need to win a match, the default setting is go with the least risky option. That's why we have players shooting in scoring zones, which have become a new thing in GAA in the last 10 years. They only take shots in the scoring zones. They pass the ball, they recycle the ball, they don't take risks. Risk-averse play is how you win things down the stretch. So you will, if you are in an All-Ireland final and your team is 1 point ahead and you have a goal chance, you're going through on goal, and you can't fist that ball over the bar, and there's a couple of minutes left, what's your option? Give the ball straight back to the opposition, or turn around, make a beeline for the corner,
just kick it
and
over
recycle
the bar.
The ball.
Why can you only fist it in this instance?
You just kick it.
You
over
might
the
not
bar.
Have the option. You might have, but if you take the kick on, you're talking percentages here. If you're talking kicking it over the bar is a 50% chance, let's say, just argument's sake. And a fisted point is 80% chance. You're taking the 80% chance of putting it over the bar and putting your team 2 points ahead.
Underestimating the idea of players adapting here.
No, but we're not disputing that. You said a few times now that it's the right thing to do.
I recognize you are saying that, but what I'm saying is, like, Colm asked me, why do I think it would be they choose the option of because that's why.
Yeah.
Because it's the least risky way of winning the game.
Yeah, but I don't think. They would, if they were in on goal and 1 point up in the last bit play of the game, they would turn around.
I'm not saying turn directly around. They'd make a beeline.
Some of the great moments in sport is because they threw caution to the wind. It's what we remember. It's how teams win games. It's like, it's too late now. We got to do something. I'm certainly not retrieving possession.
How many of the All-Ireland wins for Dublin can you remember them taking risky options in the last 10 minutes?
Oh, but that's Dublin as a team. That's nothing to do with that. That's not to do with fisting points.
That's a bad example.
That's Dublin.
I recall Dermot Connolly kicking some outrageous scores that I wouldn't deem as within scoring zones, to be fair, too, in some of those All Ireland finals when.
How many of them came in the last 10 minutes?
There was. He kicked an outrageous one after Lee Keegan scored a goal.
There's no team has ever won anything without an element of risk.
Totally. Completely agree. I'm not saying that teams play defensively and just, you know, they don't take any risks at all. What I'm saying is, when the game is in the balance going down the stretch, you're taking the less risky option, regardless of whether the less risky option is fisting it over the bar or if it's recycling the ball.
But that's just human. I think the argument's lost a little bit in that, though. I don't think, how's that relating to the removal of a fisted hand pass point, a fisted point? What's the relationship there? If you get rid of the fisted point, are you not encouraging something other than the risk averse nature by doing that? And that's fine. It still might be risk averse, but
I still think they'll take the less risky option.
But what is the less risky option if you can't just fist it over the bar?
Making a beeline for the corner.
Recycling it.
Recycle it back. But I think, in the same way as when you see players get the ball on, say, the right-hand side or left-hand side of the 21-metre line out wide, they don't go for a point there. They recycle it and bring it back and do a loop. That's how you retain possession. That's how you maintain.
I don't think it would happen any more or less now, though. I don't think it happens any more now because the fist of point is there. I think they don't. I think the recycling still happens, and it's rare that they end up in a position where they fist it over at the end of a game anyway.
Final point I will make is that I would like to see more forwards taking no shots on for the goal. I prefer goals. Everyone prefers risk, but I just don't think we'll see that. That's kind of my main point.
No, it's not even. This isn't even up for discussion in this world of changing Gaelic football. There's no word about this.
No.
Anyway, Dara, you're sitting there, right, patiently. You're listening to us, and you are as always committed to the conversation. But there is an element of you that's mildly distracted here this morning.
Yes.
You have the floor.
Okay, well, don't make it sound like I'm that upset about it.
No, you're just
Dennis Ryan is in the comments about Sean Kelly.
Dennis Ryan.
I said that I'd spoken to people that had
Been
said
nice
before.
Be nice.
No. I just wanted to clarify. I'm not saying that Sean Kelly would have won 7 Tour de France's. I was speaking to Martin Wall of the Carrick Wheelers, who was a good friend of Sean Kelly growing up and raced with him at amateur level. A very good cyclist in his own right, who made that joke. No one said that he's going to actually go and win 7 Tour de France. He wasn't that type of rider. Now, I will also say, Dennis, you're being a little bit unfair to Sean Kelly here. He wasn't just a one-day rider. He won Paris-Nice 7 times, and that was an 8-day race. Give the man some credit. Come on now. Come on now. That's all I wanted to say. Just to clarify.
That was delivered in the tone of you had a prepared statement.
Yeah.
And then he went off script really quickly.
Yeah. And then came back to the
prepared statement. I thought about it and ripped it up, yeah.
Yeah. We'll get to the darts one day.
Oh, buddy, don't be like that.
Give us some darts, please.
Give us darts quickly. What happened? Luke Littler.
Yeah, no, he's very good. Luke Littler's class. Very good. It's like, feels now like I'm kind of a...
No, it's not, seriously. I'm not being facetious. Because we discussed this yesterday morning.
No, he was very good. He hit a 9 darter in the first leg. All right.
No,
we are out of time. No, he hit a 9 darter the other night. He was very good. There's more darts on last night. He was very good. There's more darts on tonight, and it's going to be very good. So just watch it.
He's only 19.
He is only 19, yeah, still.
Because you can go
as long as you want. Yeah.
As long as you can.
Jesus,
Who's playing tonight?
Luke Littler is playing Josh Rock. Friend of the show, Josh Rock. Not been played too well lately, so I imagine Littler will do that one all right. And Gary Anderson's playing as well. It's ever slipped my mind who he's playing. Dirk van Dijvenbode, who beat Michael van Gerwen the other night too. So Gary Anderson, as you say, how old can you go playing darts? He's 56 at the moment, I think, or he's just 56. So Luke Littler's got another 4 decades at the helm.
What is the average age like?
They're kind of in their 40s? Mid to late 30s.
How could you possibly know this, but do you think Luke Littler will have a very long career? Just from what you've seen so far, because it's so early. Who knows what he's going to do?
I think he won't have a very long career in the limelight. Okay. Longest careers in darts, I don't know. I think there could be a prolonged hiatus somewhere in between, which is something that happens in darts quite a lot, but most of the time when the players come back, they're nowhere near what they were.
Is he already the wealthiest darts player?
I think so, yeah. He signed an outrageous deal worth, I think, tens of millions. It could be up 20-odd million or something.
It's a lot of money.
Over the course of, I think it's 12 or 15 years with Target, who were like a darts ambassador brand type thing. So, yeah, he's definitely up there. He's earned, I think, his rank in money. He was up over 3 million, which is like the first time that had happened ever, really. Over a 2-year period. That's just purely from throwing darts. That's not and to do with his sponsorship.
You really hope someone like that has good people around him.
I was just thinking when
that can go to your head obviously very quickly.
He's a kid, essentially. Endo, we're done, I'd say, are we? Do you want to do your player of the year nominees?
I will do that later.
Later, really?
We'll do it later.
Do you know TNT Sports Show Serie A?
ITV have a couple of Serie A.
No, I would. I'm not trying to relitigate old arguments, but I would say a lot of neutrals would watch that. You know what I mean? They wouldn't have a team necessarily.
I watch European football.
You watch anything?
I watch anything. But that doesn't mean that I expect other people outside of Ireland to watch.
I think I'm right about the League of Ireland thing. I'm just going to say.
Mm. Okay.
I think I'm right about that.
Yeah.
Okay. I feel strongly that it could go somewhere.
Off the Ball Breakfast. With Viagra Connect 50 milligram film coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150 milligram tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.
Football on Off the Ball.
The Messi fairy tale in 2022 was absolutely right. Everybody in the world wanted Messi to win the World Cup. Even the opposition players, everyone felt he deserved it. It was been a long time coming.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.